house, dismal, dark, and dusty, which seems withered and yellow and shriveled like its owner, lives Arthur Gride. Ancient, meager furniture, hard as miser's hearts, is ranged in sparse and gloomy rooms. A tall, grim clock with long, lean hands and a famished face ticks in cautious whispers, and when it strikes the hour in thin and piping sounds, it rattles as if it were pinched with hunger. And as an accompaniment, from the most spare and hungry room in all this spare and hungry house, there come the tremulous tones of...
Current and tool through the old shoe, and may the wedding be light. Now, am I alone? Yes, quite alone.
Mr. Gride approaches a tall, gaunt cabinet shrunk up in a dark corner of the room where it seems to totter from constant fear and dread of thieves.
Here it is.
Gride removes a rusty key, and once again, checking over his shoulder, he sinks to his knees before a strong box which is bolted to the floor.
Come on, my lovely. Here it is.
Gride withdraws a greasy volume full of records of ruined men. He hugs it briefly to himself with his grey bony arms, and then unlocks the rusty clasps of the dirty old vellum book and opens it with a look of joyful greed.
One of the most entertaining books that's ever been written. None of your storybook writers will ever make as good a book as this, I warrant me. Every letter, every figure, my own writing. And what fine, pretty figures they are. Finer even than that of Madeline Bray. Oh, yes, prettier still than she.
Gride carries the dusty tome to his desk, puts on his spectacles, turns a new page, picks up a pen, and begins to write.
It's a large sum, John Nickleby. Very large sum indeed. Still, there's the per contra by means of the pretty cheeky. She'd better be worth the money. Why did I agree to such a large sum? Oh, why did I agree to any sum at all? She looks at me in such a way sometimes. I think she yearns for me as I yearn for her. Oh, those lips. I should like to Peg the bell. Peg the bell. The bell, Peg. Peg. Peg.
Peg Sliderskew finally appears and looks deftly at Gride.
The bell, Peg. The bell!
Contorting himself into the grotesque caricature of a man ringing at a bell, Gride eventually makes himself understood. And a few moments later, Newman Noggs is ushered into the room.
Mr. Gride, I have a letter.
A letter from Nickleby. Give it me, give it me.
Answer, please. The bearer waits.
Oh, yes, I'll write a line. I'm rather flooded, Mr. Noggs. The news is...
Bad?
No, Mr. Noggs, thank you. It's good, good. The news is good. You wait one moment.
While Gride steps into his study, he leaves the letter lying on the table. Mr. Noggs leans over to read what his master has written.
Gride, I saw Bray and proposed the day after tomorrow for your marriage. He has no objection. And all days are alike to his daughter. You must be there at 7 in the morning and make no further visits to the girl in the meantime. She does not languish for you. Restrain your youthful ardour for 8 and 40 hours and leave her to her father. You only undo what he does. And does well. Ralph Nickleby.
This is my reply. There. Hurry with it. Run all the way.
Saddened at even the small part he has had to play in this tragedy. Noggs walks slowly back to the office where, without removing his hat and gloves, he hands Gride's letter to Ralph Nickleby, before turning on his heel and returning to the street. He walks for a while, aware that he has been followed by the same man who has plagued him over recent days, and deciding he must find drink and company to raise his spirits, he sends a message instructing his good friend Nicholas to meet him at the Spread Eagle Inn.
Ah, Noggs. All is well.
better for seeing you.
But is it not early for my uncle to let you out from work?
I could not stand another minute of looking at his face. I would have twisted it off, or smashed it with a heavy object, or spat upon it.
He is not mistreating you, is he?
No more than usual.
Well, you should not have to put up with such behaviour.
Well, perhaps I won't have to for much longer.
What do you mean?
I don't know, but I think I'm going to find out something concerning the old dog soon.
And what may that be?
I don't know what it may be. I don't know what it may not be. But I've found out a man who plainly knows much more than he cares to tell at once, though he has dropped such hints as to puzzle me.
Who is he?
I'm not sure. He came to the office twice and asked for Nickleby. He gave the name of Brooker.
And what then?
Why, then he lurked about and dogged me in the street. He follows me night after night. He says he wants to see your uncle face to face.
And he is refused.
Well, Nickleby says Brooker is an audacious dog and an idle ruffian, a vagabond from beyond the sea, where he travelled for his crimes. But the fellow swears your uncle will hear him eventually, and then he will change his tune.
My uncle? I doubt it. The man must be one of his debtors, and though he usually pursues them, not the other way round.
He's acting altogether mysterious at the moment, getting involved in dastardly schemes, ruining innocent young lives.
Oh, let us talk of other people and more cheerful matters.
Yes, indeed. What has happened concerning the delicate issue which you confided in me of a certain young lady?
A certain young beautiful lady.
You still admire her?
Well, the beautiful, exquisite, perfect young lady, Noggs. No.
No?
No. It is much worse. I love her. I worship her. I adore her. My Miss Bray is the most marvellous.
What did you say?
It's true, Noggs. I love her. I worship her.
No, no, the other bit. Her name.
Miss Bray.
Other name. Say her other name.
Oh, Madeline. Madeline Bray. Why? Why do you ask?
It's the same. Sad story. Can you stand idle by and let that unnatural marriage take place without one attempt to save her?
What do you mean? Marriage? Are you mad?
Are you mad? Do you know that within one day, by means of your uncle, she'll be married to a man as bad as he, and worse, if worse there is?
What can you mean?
I never heard her name. Why didn't you tell me? How was I to know? We might at least have had time to think.
Tell me what you mean.
Rage, astonishment, indignation, and a storm of passions rush through Nicholas's heart as he hears the plot laid bare. He no sooner understands it all and understands his uncle's cruel part in it than with a face of ashy paleness, he darts from the tavern.
Stop him! He'll do something desperate. He'll murder somebody. Hello there! Stop him! Stop, thief!
Noggs runs in so breathless a condition that Nicholas slackens his pace, anxious for his pursuer's health.
I will go straight to Bray. If there is one jot of humanity lingering in his breast, one spark of consideration for his own child, I will awaken
it. You will not! You will not indeed.
Then I will act upon my first impulse and go straight to my uncle and drag him from his bed and...
No, 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 that'll do no good. We must be cool, reasonable, give time for thought. Where are your friends, the Jeeribles?
Both absent on urgent business, as they will be for a week to come.
What about their nephew?
What could he do that I cannot? What can I do? The father urges, the daughter consents. These demons have her in their toils. How can I hope to save her?
Hope to the last. Always hope. Never leave off hoping. Do all you can do and hope, hope, hope.
In a few hours, Madeline Bray will be placed forever beyond my reach and consigned to unspeakable misery. There is no hope left.
Don't despair. Don't give up yet. For her sake.
You are right. Oh, my suffering is nothing compared to hers. I must think of her. I must help her.
Yes, yes.
I will go to see her. I will do what the brothers Cheeryble would do if they were here. I will reason with her upon this hideous union and point out all the horrors to which she is hastening. I will entreat her to pause. I will beg her to... Well, she can have had no counsellor for her good. No friend, no supporter. She needs me.
Bravely spoken. Well done, well done. Yes, yes, very good. Now, go.
And so Nicholas, his heart bursting with emotion, makes his way with trepidation to the Bray household. If the door is locked, or my access denied, why, I shall force my way in. I shall burst through the very walls. I shall... the door has been left open. Nicholas finds Madeline sitting alone. It is only a week since he had last seen her, but there is a change in the lovely girl which tells Nicholas in startling terms what mental suffering has been compressed into that short time.
Miss Brown, it is all right. I mean you no harm. Where is your father?
Sleeping in the other room. Do you wish to speak to him?
No, it is you that I wish to speak to, if you will hear me.
I'm not sure. I was not expecting you. Have you some orders for paintings or stitchwork for me?
No, indeed. I have no orders, but I have fears. Fears that your father may be consigning you to do something worse than supporting him by the labour of your hands, even if you worked yourself to death.
For heaven's sake, do not say such things. If you are charged with a commission to me, please, come back the day after tomorrow.
That will be too late for what I have to say. Madam, I must beseech you to contemplate again the fearful course to which you have been impelled. This marriage was fixed by one who never falters in bad purpose. And although you cannot be fully conscious of all his villainy, you have heard him speak and looked upon his face. Reflect. Reflect before it is too late.
I cannot. I must not.
You are betrayed and sold for money. For gold whose every coin is rusted with tears, if not red with the blood of ruined men.
Stop, please. I have a duty to discharge. And with the help of heaven, I will perform it.
Say rather with the help of devils. One of them, your intended husband.
I must not hear
you. But you must. Please. I implore you. Shrink from this foul wretch as you would from corruption and disease. Suffer toil and labor if you will, but shun him and be happy.
I will not disguise from you that I have undergone great pain of mind and have been nearly broken-hearted since I saw you last. I do not love this gentleman. But by accepting his proposal, I can release my father and perhaps even prolong his life.
But what of your life?
If I cannot, in reason or nature, love the man who pays this price for my poor hand, I can discharge the duties of a wife. I can be all he seeks in me and will. He is content to take me as I am. I should rejoice, not weep, that it is so. I am happy in the prospect of all I can achieve so easily, and shall be more so when I look back on it and all is done, I know.
Your tears fall faster as you talk of happiness. What can I say that will induce you to pause at this last moment? What can I do to save you?
Nothing. Have mercy on me, sir, I beseech you, and do not pierce my heart with such a field of pain.
Please, Madeline, this may be the last time we shall ever meet on earth.
It may be better for us both, Mr.
No. Madeline, please.
Go. Be sure to tell the Cherubles that you left me happy. God be with you, sir, my grateful blessing. Goodbye.
With that, she is gone. And Nicholas finds himself alone, broken-hearted, and despairing.